I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore!"
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Film Flam. This week, we are going to be looking at American TV and how it has changed absolutely since when we were children, and has become the premier art form in terms of visual art forms, and has overtaken Hollywood in terms of films in the last 10, 15 years. And it's been an incredible process that we've really lived through the golden age of drama on American TV. And much like in the 1970s in Hollywood, the way a whole generation of filmmakers that had just started a film school, now we see in Hollywood a whole of the smartest people that are coming out of America are working in TV and also are working in these really complex, intelligent dramas. And as The Godfather and Taxi Driver and Badlands and all the wonderful films of the 70s informed the whole culture in America, I do think that the American TV dramas that are on cable TV have developed this huge freedom that now they're capable of telling these fantastic stories over 5-6 series and completely immersive, art forms. And I would almost say it's like the supreme art form at the moment in any field. So this week I'm going to look at the three real big blockbusters as I see it. And they're all crime dramas, funnily enough, much like the great filmmakers of the 70s were Scorsese, Coppola and Lumet. I think the three great filmmakers of the modern decade are David Chase, David Simons and Vince Gilligan, whose three series, The Sopranos, The Wire and Breaking Bad, have changed in the same way as the 70s directors changed the way we looked at America and looked at the whole culture and society, not just within crime, but also politically. I think they had they have a deeper impact, much like the filmmakers in the 70s. And these are very political programs. And they might from the outside look like crime dramas, but they are saying a lot about America in the same way as The Godfather did. So the first program we're going to look at is The Sopranos. And of course, here is the famous theme tune.
And after 3 days of drinking with Davidoff, I just get an inkling to go on home. So I'm walking down Cold Harbor Lane, head hung low, 3 or 4 in the morning. The sun's coming up and the birds are out singing. I let myself into my pad, wind my way up that spiral staircase and stretch out nice on the Chesterfield. Pithecanthropus erectus already on the CD player, and I just push that remote button to sublimity and listen to the sweet sculptural rhythms of Charles Mingus and G.R. Monroe's and Jackie McLean, duet on those saxophones, and the sound makes its way out the window, mingling with the traffic noises outside, you know. All of a sudden I'm overcome by a feeling of brief mortality, cause I'm getting on in the world, coming up on 41 years, 41 stony gray steps towards the grave. You know, the box awaits its grisly load. Now I'm gonna be food for worms. And just like Charles Mingus wrote that beautiful piece of music, Epitaph for Eric Dolphy, I say, so long, Eric. So long, John Coltrane and Charles Mingus. So long, Duke Ellington and Lester Young. So long, Billie Holiday and Ella Fitzgerald. So long, Jimmy Reed. So long, Muddy Waters. And so long, Howlin' Wolf.
You woke up this morning, got yourself a gun. Your mama always said you'd be the chosen one. Good baby, I believe. you're feeling fine. Shame about it, no wonder a bad sign. With a blue moon in your eyes, so sing it now.
Woke up this morning.
Down, load above, things ain't been the same since the blues walked in a town. Hey, but you one in a million, cause you got that shotgun shine. Shave my body, bone under a bad sign, with a blue moon in your eyes. So sing it now.
Woke up this morning,
you got a blue moon,
got a blue moon in your eyes.
So sad, goddamn, goddamn, shave my body.
Theme tune, Woke Up This Morning, was by Alabama Tree, who funnily enough didn't make a penny off that song. And it seems perfectly like it was written for it, but in fact it was, and it's off their album, Far From Cold Harbor Lane. But what's really intriguing about this series is that, you know, when it first came out, people thought it was just going to be like a rehash of Goodfellas, and it seemed to have the same kind of setup as Analyze This, the really, you know, the average enough Robert De Niro, Billy Crystal movie about a gangster going to a psychiatrist. But out of that, over five series, it really just delves into this character completely, almost in a Shakespearean way. And David Chase has talked about, you know, that it was going to be a very Shakespearean kind of approach he had to it. And he, funnily enough, he'd come out of working on Twin Peaks with David Lynch, and a lot of people didn't realize, but it had a lot of very surreal touches. And there was always an episode once every season where Tony would have like these very Lynchian kind of, you know, episodes where he would have dreamscapes and everything, and he would wander around and, you know, wonder about his sanity. But, you know, over the five seasons, we really saw that this was more than just a gangster series. And to kind of understand why it was more than a gangster series, we have to look at where Chase, you know, got the seed of this program. And it was the fact that he hated his mother. Without the fact that he didn't have this nightmare of a mother, we wouldn't have had The Sopranos. He would always tell stories to his friends in offices and, you know, to agents as a joke, anecdotally, about this mother, this crazy mother that he had, a psychopathic mother. So one agent or one executive said to him one day, why don't you make a program about this? So he went home and was going to make a program about his mother, and I suppose a comedy series or something what came to mind. But in fact, as he thought about it, he thought about what if his lead character had a nightmare mother, but he was a gangster, so that he could, you know, he could you know, dramatize the relationship with his mother. And out of that, you can sort of see, you know, how you know, this program developed. And out of five seasons, like that was the real thing within it. Like, this is always the thing within Tony. He was always searching for his family. It was always the public and the private fighting out. And as it went on, there was a lot of, you know, comedy in it, of course. It was a very funny program, a lot of humor using it. But like, what I always found about it is that, you know, there would be payoffs. Like, they would have an episode, you know, in the start of the series, and that would pay off, like, you know, at the end of a season. And even sometimes there was things from like series two that paid off in series five. And it had a very complex structure, and it was like almost like Dickens. It was so brilliantly designed. And I really thought it was one of the greatest programs ever. I mean, like, a lot of people say it is the godfather, as it were, of all the different programs that have come. And it is quite true. But I mean, I do think there was programs like, as I mentioned, Twin Peaks and Hill Street Blues, and even in our program, 6 Feet Under, I think, which was around the same time as Sopranos. And they all had the same kind of level of complexity. So it was, strangely enough, within Hollywood, and especially in HBO and cable, which were given enough freedom, that basically how it was allowed to become, like the BBC, you know, like there were like swear words and explicit sex and violence and all these things, you know, and it became almost like, you know, and then lots of money went into it because of the way that the system works. So they could get lots of money to make these really, you know, fascinating dramas. And I suppose no more than the last, the end of The Sopranos, you know, everyone kind of always talks about it. And I suppose, no one kind of really could figure out what the end of it means. It was very kind of opaque. But I think we should really just look at it as one of the, you know, the great, great, great series. And of course, it always had a great soundtrack. And here is John Cooper Clarke with Evidently Chicken Town, which was used in a very famous episode of The Sopranos.
The bloody cops are bloody king, bloody keep it bloody clean. Bloody chiefs are bloody swine, bloody draws the bloody line. The bloody fun and bloody games, the bloody kids in bloody blames. Nowhere to be bloody found, anywhere in Chicken Town. The bloody scene is bloody sad, the bloody news is bloody bad. The bloody weed is bloody turf, the bloody speed is bloody surf. Bloody folks are bloody daft, don't make me bloody laugh. Bloody hurts to look around, everywhere in Chicken Town. Bloody train is bloody late, your bloody way, your bloody way. Bloody lost and bloody found, stuck in fucking Chicken Town.
That was the great John Cooper Clarke with Evidently Chicken Town, a great song, and, you know, very unexpected in The Sopranos. And I think John Cooper Clarke got a lot of fans out of The Sopranos, which was great. So now we're going to talk about David Simons. David Simons is probably the most important, you know, politically. I think he's very important in America as a writer. He's really changed the way in which people look at America. And I find him to be, you know, probably the most important writer, you know, in America at the moment, but both technically and, you know, formally, and also in terms of what he's saying. Like, this guy is, you know, much more important to me than any of the guys who win the Pulitzer Prizes or, you know, win all the different things in America, and different prizes. but this is the most important writer probably in America right now. And this is because he looks at the poor, the bottom of America, and he looks at the structure of America. And his program, The Wire, I think, you know, is you know, changed the way, absolutely the way TV worked. But I also think it made people look at the people at the bottom of American society. These people have become worthless because, you know, in America, as we know politically now, it's the people at the bottom are not even, you know, registered to vote. You know, they're drug dealers, you know, they're scum to the average American and to the American media. And what David Simons did is he humanized these people at the bottom. He showed you, you know, that these people weren't, you know, deadbeats. They weren't the losers that they're painted elsewhere in Hollywood cinema and in mainstream media in America. So, like, I think this was a very huge step. David Simons, he started off working on different TV series before this, but he initially started off as a journalist. And this led him to write the book Homicide: Life in the Streets, about, you know, a year in a murder investigation in America. And when that nonfiction book became one of the, you know, one of the great nonfiction books in America. And then out of that, he also, the TV series came, and also he started making TV programs with a program called The Corner, which is about just a crack house. So, I mean, these two, perhaps the crack house program probably was too severe, and then I think the homicide he found was too mainstream. But by combining the two together, I think he created a very interesting dichotomy and showed how that dichotomy is false, that the, you know, the crime and the law are, you know, both on two sides of the same coin. And I think, you know, like I mentioned Lumet, who's like one of his great heroes, and is one of his films, Prince of the City, has been a huge influence on David Simons. But like this film showed, you know, in five series, how the strata within Baltimore, because it was all set in the town of Baltimore, how the different strata, and the first series it was drugs, the second series it was the unions, in the third series it was the political system and how that worked, and then the education system was the fourth season and possibly my favorite one, and then the last one was the newspapers, which was very close to his own heart, and he saw how America had the kind of tabloid culture and how that, like, the internet and all these various things were destroying the great traditions of reporting, and how, like, people who weren't very good reporters were climbing the ranks because they were prepared to do things quicker and cut corners and do stories that, you know, perhaps weren't true, but were, you know, could be done quickly. So this, you know, all of this now just seems so prescient given what's going on in America at the moment. Like, this is, you know, like David Simons was talking about the 1%, even when people, before the bank collapse, he saw how, you know, the American society was allowing people at the bottom to just end up in these awful conditions, like selling drugs or, you know, ending up shot dead. And I'm sure everybody who watched it, in fact, their favorite characters, like myself, were the characters who were trying to get off the drugs, or who were robbing drugs of others, like Omar, you know, or Bodie, or, you know, all these different characters. And, you know, in fact, you know, the characters that really, really hit home weren't McNulty or the cops or, you know, like Tommy Carchetti, you know, played by Aidan Gillen. You know, these were, in fact, these didn't hit as much as the other characters. And indeed, the police team, in fact, became kind of less important than the people that, you know, we were seeing socially how it was working. And in fact, this series was like the great social, kind of social realism that's been missing in American cinema. Like, this was the Ken Loach. And, you know, people don't like to compare him to Ken Loach, but he is. Because there's crime elements, you know, you probably don't see it, but this is very Loachian in its approach to English society. And I mean, it had a great soundtrack, it was very cool, it was very hip, and the hip-hop people loved it, and all these weird people saw it. But I think, you know, I think Barack Obama is, you know, definitely saw that this was, you know, how America was going. And he even, in when he became, you know, part of the election, the 2004 election, he definitely talked about, or the 2008 election, how he definitely talked about how this program had affected him very deeply. And I mean, it has had huge political impact, and that he has tried to get back to school programs, the Medicare, all these different things that he's trying to introduce within America were definitely influenced by what David Simons was saying. And what's interesting now is that David Simons' series since The Wire, Tremé, which is equally as brilliant, It's set in New Orleans, and it's about Obama-era America. I mean, I suppose there is a bit of the hangover from Bush because it's set just after the Katrina. But we can sort of see, you know, it's like more upbeat, in fact, because it's about the music scene. So, you know, it's more enjoyable in terms of that. But it's, again, like showing how, you know, the structure of America affects the people at the bottom the most. You know, how that this class system that's, you know, apparently invisible, but definitely preferences the rich over the very poor. And that if you don't get to a certain level of success in America, you're just left to rot. Like, this kind of rootless aspect of American society is definitely dealt with in Treme. Talking about music, let's take another track. And this one is now from Tom Waits. And it's Way Down the Hole, which was the song for... It was done by different artists, but, you know, let's be honest, this is still the best.
When you walk through the garden, you gotta watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon. Walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, he's gonna save your soul. You gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. He's got the fire and the fury at his command. Well, you don't have to worry if you hold on to Jesus' hand. We'll all be safe from Satan when the thunder rolls. We just gotta keep the devil way down in the hole. Jesus' mighty sword, and they'll shield you with their wings and keep you close to the Lord. Don't pay heed to temptation, for his hands are so cold. You gotta help me keep the devil way down in the hole. 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 You gotta help me keep the devil down in the hole.
Okay, we're back. That was Tom Waits with Way Down the Hole. Great, great, great song. Off, I think it's Frank Wild Years, if I'm correct. Great, great song. And yeah, I think it kind of expressed a lot of things that were going on the wire. But yeah, we're going to move on now to the other great TV program of the last golden age of, I suppose people would call them crime dramas on cable, but they're a lot more than that. I mean, as I've been saying, they're about how the political system in America actually works, and how the society in America works, and they're brilliantly written. And of course, the one that I think is the greatest of all. I mean, maybe because it's just been the one that I've been watching most recently. It's astonishing, absolutely astonishing piece of work is Breaking Bad. And this looks at the great topic that's not been discussed in the election in America, and it's not mentioned by any of the shows or any of the TV programs that talk about what's going on in America at the moment, and that is the drug industry in America. And this has been the greatest disaster for America, and it's always a sideline issue, and it's always like, oh, legalized pot or this or that. But I mean, the way in which the drug culture works in America, like there is so many people in jail in America because of the drug industry, and most of them are poor, are black, are immigrants. So this shows how the recession is affecting them, but also shows how the recession is affecting the middle class in America. It's a great show about the debt of the middle class within America and how the very, very wealthy have been sucking America dry, leaving the people at the very bottom and now even at the middle destroyed. And in the lead character of Walt, played brilliantly by Bryan Cranston from Malcolm in the Middle, who knew he was such an amazing, amazing actor. I mean, probably Vince Gilligan, who spotted him. I think they worked together on The X-Files, and he spotted him in an episode called Drive. And this, he could see that this actor had the complexity to play this amazing, you know, like there's so many sides to Walt. But I think the initial mission statement of the series was to make, you know, a protagonist who was just so sympathetic and, you know, had this, you know, this awful, you know, set of circumstances that he basically, his wife is pregnant, he's got cancer, and his son has got, you know, physical issues with himself. So basically he has to provide. So he's a chemistry teacher, and through, you know, different things that happen, he ends up becoming a met cook. And this seemed, you know, when you first started watching the program, it seemed kind of extraordinary, this leap. But as it went on, it became more believable and it became so exciting. And I think because it's such a thrilling program and each episode is like such a ticking clock, that you really get sucked into it. But, you know, and visually, it is probably the most interesting program on TV at the moment. I mean, it's shot in 35mm and it uses wide-angle lenses. It uses extraordinary, you know, it puts lenses on top of hands, like POV lenses everywhere. It's got this incredible visual scheme, which is just extraordinary to watch. And there's no, like, you know, there's no, every rule is broken in the book in terms of the visual scheme of this program, and the editing is extraordinary. I mean, this is, you know, if you want to talk about a program that's so well put together, this is it. And of course, this has, much like The Sopranos we talked about earlier, it has a great plant and payoff scheme where you watch some series where there's like something planted in one series and then, you know, three series later, it's paid off. It is so kind of planned out and mapped out. And Vince Gilligan and his story writers, I mean, it's so fantastically written in terms of that. It's so fascinating to watch. And I mean, the characterization, all the characters, each one is more fantastic than the next. And you really are sucked into these characters who are slightly comic. I mean, slightly exaggerated, but I mean, it really, really taps into, you know, what is actually going on in America at the moment. And I suppose the big thing that's going on in America is the inequality. And I suppose with migrant workers as well, it really shows you that this is kind of ever present in the kind of the New Mexico that it's set in. Like this issue of like people coming over the border and the violence they're bringing in from the third world of Mexico and the real extreme violence that's going on there over the border, and how the fear of people being sent back there, or the fear of the people that are coming over the border from there, and how that there is this, you know, this middle class that seems kind of very cloistered from that. But they all know and they all fear that that cloister is now being destroyed by, you know, I suppose they would say that the Obama era America. But it's more than that. I think that this program is just a really fascinating kind of structured drama. But it also has this really political point to make about the drug war and the inequality and the immigrant issue, because these are very, very central to what Vince Gilligan believes, a man who, you know, knows New Mexico really well, and he knows the class structure in America. And I would, like, if you haven't seen this program and you've kind of been tempted by box sets, I would rate it above them all. I mean, even like people talk about Mad Men now recently being up there, but Mad Men is a completely kind of, I suppose there is slightly political things within it. It is a kind of a, but it is slightly escapist compared to Breaking Bad, which is just a real punch in the face to modern America and to the kind of, you know, as we watch the election now with Mitt Romney, who seems totally, you know, totally cut off from the world of Breaking Bad or The Sopranos or The Wire. Like, you know, you couldn't imagine him hanging out with any of these people. And it seems that the 1% or whatever in America, that or the 47% as he called them the other day, you know, these people are being decimated, and these programs dramatize that and actually fight against it. And I think anyone who, you know, has interest in American politics or American society has to see these programs, because they dramatize them, you know, in a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant way. So, yeah, that's American drama the last 15 years. We've had an incredible time in terms of these dramas, you know, I suppose because of awful things that have been happening in America.
Do you see? The sun is rising, most definitely. A new day is coming. Ooh, people are changing. Ain't it beautiful? Crystal blue persuasion. Better get ready. Gonna see the light. Love is the answer. Ooh, and that's all right. So don't you give up. So easy to find. Just look to your soul.
Look to your soul.
And open your mind.
That was Tommy James and the Shondells with Crystal Blue Persuasion, which was used at the end of the last season of Breaking Bad. And I'm sure everyone like myself who watched it still wants to time travel and just wants to see the last 8 episodes of this season, because it was such a great cliffhanger. But that was used brilliantly in that. And yeah, it was absolutely a great finale But, you know, you wouldn't have seen it on RTE. That's because RTE are spending all our taxpayers' money on paying for, you know, presenters to have nice clothes and to be on these big sets. And I suppose for like more middle-aged viewers, that's grand. And even, you know, probably pensioners probably really enjoy the Late Late Show and other such programs that are on TV. And, you know, how am I to judge that? But it's just really sad that I think that we're not seeing any of these American programs. I mean, all of these programs, I think TG Carr actually was the only one that actually showed The Wire or The Sopranos or Breaking Bad now. But, you know, even at that, they're a season behind. And this to me is like, you know, what I want to talk about in the next bit of the program is about television in Ireland, perhaps. And, you know, the way in which I suppose people would say Love and Hate probably was along the same lines as that. But I mean, when RT are spending money, you know, like on Mad Men, on Breaking Bad, and all these different programs, they're putting them on at like 2 o'clock in the morning or 12 o'clock at night or whenever they did, you know, and even like Breaking Bad should be on, you know, if you're going to spend all the money on it, just so your competitors don't get it, like TV3 doesn't get it, why are you then putting it on, you know, in the middle of the night? I mean, it seems to me like a monopoly that's going on within RT at the moment with these programs, because these programs are very important even for our own society. And if RT are not going to make these programs and are going to make, you know, like programs like Love and Hate, which are fine, which are kind of, you know, well done kind of rehashes of what's going on in America, and an attempt to kind of put them into an Irish context, that's fine. I mean, it's not, it's, you know, but it does kind of focus on more the gangster thing and the Paul Williams-y kind of, you know, Sunday world kind of aspect of it. And it doesn't go into the social realist aspect of them, which all these programs have done to one degree or another. And I think what's really sad is the way in which RT used to have, you know, a really good radical kind of, you know, view of these things. I mean, there was like at one stage, you know, in the 60s, there was, you know, a flicker of like a radical kind of filmmaking that was going to happen. I mean, there was the Rocky Road to Dublin, which is a great film about Dublin, and, you know, is a great insight on what was happening in Dublin at the time, and it was very radical, and, you know, again, was banned, and was, you know, was like really frightened everybody. But the only program really that we can kind of, if we look back in RTE, that did anything like social realist would probably be Day in the Life of Martin Cluxton. This was a kind of film made in the 60s, which, you know, dealt with a kind of Northside boy and how impossible it was for him to break out of kind of Dublin. And it had a very kind of, again, the Lochian kind of view of you know, kind of social realist, you know, kind of, you know, society that you're kind of stuck in at the bottom. And I, you know, and then following up through the 80s, there was always a kind of a very strong kind of, and, you know, there was a real anger at the TV programs, and they weren't just entertainments. As similar to the ones now that are being made in America. And I mean, I suppose it seems a bit of a leap to kind of make it, but I mean, I do think one of the real seminal films made in Ireland of all time, to me, is called Black's Our Boys, which was made in 81 and was actually banned for 10 years. And when you look at it now, it seems quite tame. I mean, it's about Christian Brothers, and it's, I suppose it's about the cruelty that they've inflicted upon their charges. And it shows like the real cruelty of this, but people say it like it doesn't pull its punches, but to us now it looks very tame, knowing the cruelty we know, knowing the reports that are coming out week after week after week. But if you think back to 1981 and how nobody was talking out about this, you know, I mean, no one would even dare to criticize them, you know, the church back in those days, and this is well before Brendan Smith or even Eamon Casey, you know. But I think like this film really kind of shows you that these people were vicious. I mean, it's a really great piece of work, and it's written by kind of one of our great Irish writers, Dermot Healy, who's written some fantastic books recently. You know, like his novels are just incredible, and you know, he is a great writer. But like Dermot Healy wrote the script for Call Black, and Call Black had previously worked on a film Wheels, I think, based on John McGahern. And after that, he made a film, Pigs, which was an even angrier film, and Korea, which is another McGahern. But I think Our Boys really, you know, it's one of those really fascinating films. I mean, just even, you know how the structure of it was really fascinating, in that they had interviews and they had drama mixed together. And what it also did, which I thought was really great, is that it really humanized the Christian Brothers. It didn't just show, you know, them, you know, beating up kids and that was it, but it also showed how sad their lives, how lonely their lives were. And this was in some ways more radical to Irish people, because they always like taught priests, you know, after they, you know, brothers, they kind of went off and they lived in kind of these kind of clouds or whatever, but they lived in these kind of really sad lives. I mean, and I suppose, you know, in a weird way, that kind of did kind of, you know, percolate through to like stuff like Father Ted, you know, that show this kind of just bizarre, sad, lonely lives that are depicted in Our Boys. But, you know, in Father Ted, they went for a surrealist view of that. But, you know, the sadness of these lives, the pathetic waste of these lives within a kind of a Christian-run Irish country. And it was like, you know, had a great cast as well. What's fascinating about it is, like, if you look at the cast as well, it's got like Mick Lally, he's kind of one of the main guys, and it's terrifying in it. I mean, really different to Miley. And he, you know, if you like when he died, this is what I thought about, you know, this fascinating way he had of, you know, being incredibly, you know, cruel and vicious, but kind of pulling it all in as well. And, you know, just, you know, just a really great screen actor that didn't get his due. Kieran Hines is in it. I mean, a really early role for Kieran Hines. I think, if not his first role, he's brilliant in it. And Johnny Murphy, Joey the Lips is in it briefly as a van driver. So, you know, it's worth watching for those guys. But I think what really it did was it kind of opened a can of worms on this and let this kind of be open. And this wound kind of was open then, and people would speak out about it. And I suppose it really wasn't until Mary Raftery, States of Fear, many years later, that we found out about the sexual nature of the abuse. But, you know, like, definitely Call of Black's film should be looked at as quite visionary in kind of opening and expressing these things, awful things that were going on. And I don't think without Call of Black's Our Boys that Mary Raftery, States of Fear, would have come into being. And, you know, and that also changed Ireland. I mean, absolutely. I don't think without these films, we would have been able to get the church taken out of our country and put in a lesser place. And I know it still has power over certain people, but I, you know, not anything like 81. If you think of 1981, how ruled we were by the church. I mean, this film, you know, really spoke up and spoke out against that and did change things. I mean, it is definitely a film that changed the world, at least in Ireland. And possibly further afield, Face of Fear definitely changed things, you know, worldwide as well. Like, it, you know, because this Ireland was one of the first places for all this abuse to come out, and for Irish people to question the Catholic Church at that time in the 90s was astonishing. But what I really want to end on is actually a note of sadness, and it is the way RT don't do these things anymore. I mean, it seems to make flashy documentaries about the economic situation. I mean, but the only glimmer of light recently was Lenny Abramson and his films Garage and Adam and Paul, and his TV program as well, Prosperity, which was good, you know, which was really kind of delving into the kind of social realist aspect of Irish society. And in entertaining ways, I mean, if Breaking Bad and The Wire can do these things, I don't see why Ireland can't do them without just reveling in the violence and the kind of gangsterism. I mean, this, you know, we are suffering more than any other nation on earth in terms of the austerity measures, you know, and why is this not being expressed by RT? And, you know, definitely we're being shown in America there's new modes. And it seems to me, almost, if you were to be conspiracy theorist, why aren't we being showing more of these programs? Why are they denigrated onto TV3? And why aren't more programs like this in a drama where you can get a lot more difficult subject matter? And why is that not being expressed? And instead of, you know, just showing a bunch of gangsters and cokeheads, why don't we see the horror, the reality, and the, you know, what's actually going on in Ireland at the moment? We're just seeing, you know, why we're relying on America to kind of use for reflection. So, yeah, absolutely. That's the end of this week. Sorry to end on such a bum note, but here's some Undertones with Jump Boys, hopefully to cheer you up. Thank you. Bye.
That's all we have time for this week. I hope you can join me next week for the next Film Flam film program.
I came in here. I don't like these movies.
Well, I mean, I didn't know that you'd feel that way about this movie. I don't know much about movies, but if I...
Is this the only kind of movies you go to?
Well, yeah, I mean, I come and they are, this is not so bad.